Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners are warned that the following podcast program may contain stories, names and voices of deceased persons.
This is Outback Out Loud.
People and stories from Outback New South Wales.
You get the first ray of light and the last ray of light.
Peace and quiet, worth its weight in gold.
We're coming to you from Galaganban.
The whole of Nevertire are our neighbours.
Check out Corinda.
Welcome to Growin', to the club in the scrub.
I've lived in Gadigal all my life.
We drove into Lightning Ridge and I was coming home.
Outback Out Loud!
That's what I like.
Welcome to Outback Out Loud, Season 3, Villages.
In this season, we explore stories and life experiences from the most remote centres in New South Wales.
Here's Jude in Corinda, talking about the day she met David Bowie.
I came through town in the morning and then in the afternoon I was heading home and there was heaps of cars here. And I thought, oh. I said, what's happening out of the pub? And I said, oh, someone's doing a music clip. And they got the name wrong and they said Bowie and I said Bowie. I couldn't believe it and I walked in with my daughter Regan. She was on my hip and I walked in and here he was standing there talking to the locals. But he'd already done the clip and I just stared at him. Couldn't believe it. He didn't have a shirt on. I was like, oh. Then I'm trying to ring my husband to get him to come in and I had to get the young girl at the exchange to say, no, Judy's telling the truth. So he came in, but yeah, I was just standing there staring at him because he still didn't have a shirt on from the clip, so that was pretty special. But he had all this sort of makeup on it, and he he was covered in it, poor bugger, because it was so hot. It was really hot day. And the exchange girl said, I can't come. Because you can't go away from a phone exchange. So that's when I asked him to go up there, and he said, okay. So he went up and saw her. I said, oh, your biggest fan's down at the exchange. Can you go down and see her? And he went, oh, yeah. So his bodyguard walked down with us and his son. So we went there and that's where I got my photo taken because she had a camera, so I got my photo taken with him. So I went to a concert about 2 years before in Perth and to a David Bowie concert, Perth Entertainment Centre. And I had the ticket in my wallet, so I got him to sign it. And I also got him to sign a photo of me and my twin that was there, like two things. I lost the ticket and my sister still got the signature on the photos, so that's her, so she's not giving it back, which I don't blame her because I gave it to her. I said, here, I got you one, because it was a photo of me and her, and you know those booths where you take those photos? Yeah, it was one of them. Yeah, he was a really lovely bloke, and I thought he was taller, and I did say short in one thing, but he wasn't short, he was average height. But I think it was the boots I always imagined him taller, but it was the size of the boots he used to wear in all his video clips, I reckon, because they were pretty high. He would just smiled and said nice things, and I sort of started thinking, I wonder if he understands us all out here. Like, we're talking pretty bush country, you know, like. But me and Fred also went out to Weber's, and they had a bit to do with him because he went and had a cup of tea at their place. And because they started another video clip, China Girl. You know how she runs, I don't know if you've seen the clip, but she runs with a flag? Well, they had her doing that because they did it on a scalded flat, making out it was sort of a desert. So that's how they started that video clip. They actually started that one in Corinda. So so not many people know that, but yeah. So me and Fred go out there and watched them do it and set it all up, and yeah.
Banjo Paterson's 1892 poem, Travelling Down the Castlereagh, recounts tales of the strikes and conflicts of shearers in the 1890s when they began to unionise.
Well, hello, I'm Wolf Williams. Yeah, I just come up here for holiday when I was 16, 17, 18, 19, come up here holiday, never left. Well, I was shearing up until 9 months ago. Summertime, it could get to 50 degrees in the sheds and that, you know. One of the experts here did a few years ago tests on everything, you know, to go around seeing what all the physicality is. And, you know, I reckon shearers in a day do two marathons. You're just fighting them all day, especially the big sheep. They're not the little things you see on television shows. You know, these are 70, 80, 90, 100-kilo animals. You're just constantly full on all day. It's a sort of job that you can't sort of do it for a week, have a couple of weeks off, do it for a week, have a 3 weeks off. You've got to be at it all the time, so you're sort of match fit. Yeah. Like footballs. You know, you just... You can't miss it. You just can't... You've got to be at it all the time to stay there. Because then it does... That's when it hurts. If you're green, that's when it really does hurt. Well, you get 1,000 a day. 5 grand a week. But then wet weather might come in. Floods, then you might, big floods, you might not do this for 2 months. See, so that's a give and take. See, it's only classed as a casual job. There's no logs, there's no holiday pay, any of that. You know, it's just,
in the old days,
you get paid for what goes down the chute.
Sit outside the shed and sit there all day in case a bloke pulled out so they can get a job back in the old days. Ride push bikes about 10, 20 kilometres.
Oh, I've been in the sheds for 45, I was here in 40 years. They're a very hard animal to work with, some days they're good, some days they're bad. If you want to shear, they'll kick you all over the place. Kick your strain, kick. You sort of know, when you grab them, you know. As soon as you grab them, knock them over, you know some might kick a lot. As soon as you knock them over, then you think, I'm in for a rough few minutes here.
Ah, Rob Lawson is actually sitting at Corinda Community Hall. I was born in Sydney, but I was brought out here. I was 7 days old and I was brought out here. 16th of October, and they reckon it's one of the hottest Octobers I had back in 1967. I'm going to be straight back here. My grandma was that worried about me. She chucked me in the bathtub down the little house down here, and they chucked me straight in there because I was just red raw. It was over 40 degree day, apparently, so. And stayed out here pretty much till I was 12 or 13, I got sent down to boarding school in Sydney. And then I come back out, Mum and Dad moved to Newcastle, and I was rebellious, I didn't want to go to Newcastle. And a couple of years, they taught me into it and went down there and ended up getting a job and working down there and ended up getting married and three children. I ignored my aunties and uncles and everyone all moved down that way. And then they all turned around and moved out here, and then I ended up getting divorced. And yeah, 7 or 8 years later, I moved back out here myself. Just wanted to come back sort of home and yeah, try the farming lifestyle out and all that sort of stuff. But we walked into that bad drought 7 or 8 years ago, and I ended up jobs in Coonamble and jobs on the cotton farms out here. And yeah, so I just wanted to move back out here and try the farming air at life again. And that's because I do like this lifestyle. I remember pestering my grandfather, let me drive the tractor at 5 year old and cars and bits and pieces and started. And my parents were doing earthwork moving, sinking what dams and stuff like that. Travelling all over the countryside around here with dozers and bits and pieces and living in a caravan, and Mum used to homeschool us. And yeah, so if I wasn't annoying my mother, I was down there annoying my father. So I mean, down there and getting on the tractors and just going backwards and forwards with him all day. That's what we used to do. And then you just go and do your own shooting, chasing kangaroos, whatever else you want to do. You just, yeah. As long as you didn't get up to mischief and go and breaking things, but anything in the bush you want to do, just go and do it. I do remember going out a lot more out home. They call it the Gingit Reserve. There's a set of tennis courts there. Not in the middle of summer, but a lot of time during winter and that, we'd go down there, we'd rake these courts out. There's 3 courts, and we'd clean them all up, level them all out, then we'd roll them, water them, and then there was functions there. There'd be 20 or 30 people down there. And all the boys, men sitting over there, and all the kids and the women are out playing tennis, and the men are sitting around cooking the barbie and having a few beers. And that's what it's like. That's just an oval, and that in the middle of nowhere, scrub, just sitting out there. I suppose back them days, that more many people out there, it was closer for them to get to there than come to town, if you know what I mean. So if you want to talk about weird sightings or ghost stories, the Gingit house out there, Dad, once again, Easter time, I think they might have been in town, but he got home and Mum was in bed. that house out there, they used to have, in the Second World War, used to have Red Cross dancers. I don't know if anyone ever died at that house or not, but he reckons he come home there that night and there's a bloke standing over top of Mum with a, like, dressed up the suit and a hat, like the dance type of thing. And it was pretty spooky, but I've been out there and my great-grandmother used to live in that house, and that particular, I was staying in her bedroom and it was always cold. It doesn't matter, it's just, it was cold all the time. And my auntie stayed there and they, for a while too when she was living there, and the dogs and cats were always going off. Like, I think there is something around that house, I don't know what it is. And I have felt a couple others in a couple of different houses too, but where you're staying down there, as I was saying yesterday, that never used to be a pub. That used to be called a tea room, and it's in one of the books about it. But apparently there used to be the morgue in there. Yeah, is that, and they must have used to put them there before they had to cart them into Walgett, sort of thing. So I don't know how many people were ever in there or whatever, I don't know, but...
Locals remember Theo Konomos, originally from Greece, who ran the store and iceworks and the cinema in the 1950s and 60s. He's also remembered for personally purchasing a generator and rigging up wires to houses in town. Corinda people relied on his power until about 1962.
Hi, I'm Simone. I'm the first of four girls. Lived here most of my life, been in Orange for a little bit, and then come back when I had my daughter. I've been here ever since, floating around the district. But like, my grandmother on my mum's side was from here, and she had my mum and my uncle, and they all grew up here as well. So from a baby, my mum's been here, and they lived at the Far West store when Kathleen Barton had it there. So she grew up between, you know, the Far West store and the Megalo store when the Konomoses were there. So they were all good friends, so they were always backwards and forwards from the shops, and like, she has such good times with that. Like, she always talks about, you know, running up and down the aisles and different ones coming in and meeting new people all the time, and that was really special for them. So yeah, and as I said, you had the Konomoses across the road at the Megalo store, and out the back of that used to be the old cinema. So I remember when the Megalo store was open, I had a friend that lived out the back there. We'd always sneak out the back of the, like, where the cinema area is, and had all the old chairs and stuff in there, and you go up the stairs to the top part. We used to always sneak around there and on the creaking floorboards and just probably be into stuff that we're not supposed to be into. And yeah, but it was, yeah, between having the two shops and just seeing what it was like is really cool. So yeah. And then my dad's actually from Parks. So he got work out here at on the cotton farms, and then he come out here, and then over time he helped build the Corinda Cotton Gin, the bridge just out the road, worked on most of the farms and stuff here, so that kept him really busy over the years. So yeah, that's why we stayed here, and yeah, I don't think Mum would ever leave here. She really loved Corinda.
My name's Mick. I'm a local from Corinda.
Me too. My name's Dave Campbell. We're family.
He's my nephew.
Oh, you're related.
Yeah, I'm Corinda, born and bred. Yeah.
Always walking. Every weekend, just walking with my dog and around the paddocks. Had a slug gun and shooting targets and things like that for wild ducks and duck season. Just go and get a duck. I was old enough to use a shotgun. I got taught how to use a shotgun and go and get a wild duck. Mum used to cook them.
Going down the tip, smashing bottles, chasing crayfish and hunting all the time.
Yeah, catching yabbies, fishing.
Eating yabbies all the time.
We all grew up hunting. Yeah, we always had like rusty old paddock bashes and that too. Like, as soon as we could drive, we'd drive around the paddocks in them.
If you couldn't do it, you were staying there, no one's coming
back. Yeah, it's just part of being self-sufficient out here. It's just all those little jobs you had to know how to do. Otherwise, you're stranded. Yeah, there's no NRMA service out here.
Nice and quiet.
Nice and quiet. Peace and quiet with sweat and gold.
Ian Webber. I've lived around Corinda all my life, over 70 years, and we're still on a family property. Our grandfather bought up or drew in land ballots in 1909. We're in sheep country. We can only run sheep. We could have cattle, but we don't have the infrastructure to run cattle, so we stick to sheep. We don't have wetlands. We're only on dry land, but we live approximately 40 to 50 kilometres from the Macquarie Marshes. that we don't go there, but they are a place of significance in Australia because of the wildlife that breeds there when the Macquarie River runs. I can remember a few droughts and water got very low, but never really ran out. Yeah. But with the Artesian Basin, we're safe through a drought. We're kept and piped.
Thanks for listening. To hear more amazing stories from Outback New South Wales, check out the whole Outback Out Loud series, now streaming everywhere.
We acknowledge and celebrate the first Australians on whose traditional lands we meet and work, and whose cultures are among the oldest continuing cultures in human history. Please like, subscribe, rate us and write a review. The Outback Out Loud podcast was designed and produced by Signal Creative and is a collaboration between Signal Creative and Outback Arts. The Outback Out Loud community project and workshop series was designed and facilitated by Signal Creative. These episodes are the result of recordings and interviews collected by Signal Creative and community participants. You can find Signal Creative at signalcreative.net and Outback Arts at outbackarts.com.au, and you can find both of us on Facebook and Instagram. Audio production, sound and music design by Emma Hoy. Community liaison, research and editing by Caroline Wallace.